Okay, this week is Parashat Pinchas. The story, actually, the verses in the beginning of Pinchas deal with the episode that took place at the end of last week's Parsha, whereby we have this anonymous man who approaches this anonymous woman, and they do anonymous things. And then Pinchas rises up, and Pinchas takes the law in his hand, and he kills the both of them. At that point, there was a plague which was spread within the community, and that stops the plague. Now, first of all, just as far as the thematic issue, as far as a plague goes, we did have an earlier point in Sefer Bamidbar where there was a plague going through the camp, and at that point, Aaron picks up the incense and goes running with the incense, and that stops the plague. So we have over here is Pinchas acting very much like his grandfather in order to get a plague to stop. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. God speaks to Moshe saying, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen. Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aharon the Kohen. By the way, the word HaKohen here, who does it go on? Does the word HaKohen, does it go on Pinchas, Elazar, or Aharon? And that you're sure about, right?
No.
That you're not sure about. When we say, "Bimei Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol," who is the Kohen Gadol? Yochanan or Matisyahu? So it's machlokas. That's the right answer in all questions. It's an argument. It's not simple. It's not simple that Matityahu was the Kohen Gadol, or maybe only Yochanan, maybe both of them were, but I'm just saying it's not so simple. Over here, as we'll see, Rashi does address this point. We'll see that in a second. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen, Heshiv et Chamati, he turned my wrath away, Me'al b'nei Israel, from the Jewish people, the children of Israel, bikano et knaati, by feeling my jealousy, or he was jealous for my sake, bitocham, velo kiliti ben Israel bikinati, and therefore I did not wipe out the Jewish people in my jealousy. Lochein emor hinini notein lo et briti shalom. He says, therefore I'm going to give him my covenant of peace. Vaitalo Ulazaro Acharav Brit Kunat Olam, and he and his descendants after him will have a covenant of being a Kohen forever. Tachat Asher Kinei Lelokav, as payback for him being jealous for God, Vayichaper Al Bnei Israel, and for bringing about atonement, kapara, for the children of Israel. Now this paragraph may seem to you to be very, very simple. For me, it's not all that simple. And among the issues involved is the question I already asked you, and namely, was Pinchas at this point a Kohen or not? Now, what is, and that's one question. Second question is, what exactly is this Briti Shalom, and why does he need the Briti Shalom? Is it something that he needs, or is it some kind of a reward? If it's a reward, what exactly is it? If it's something that he needs, why does he need it? Secondly, what is the relationship between Briti Shalom and the Brit Kohunat Olam? Or do I say those are two separate things? Which means, as I'm reading this, it says, therefore I'm going to give him Briti Shalom, v'haytal olazor acharav Brit Kohunat Olam. So is that what you would call a klal uprat? I'm giving him the Briti Shalom, and what is the Briti Shalom? The Briti Shalom is the Kohunat Olam, or are these two separate things? Which brings me back to my first question. Was Pinchas a Kohen at this point or no? So, okay, now I'm asking the question for the third time, so give me, what's the answer?
No.
No. Very good. How do you know? Where did it say?
Yeah, I guess it was in the Rashi where it says.
Rashi says so. And does Rashi make this up? Absolutely not. Rashi has sources. And even though Rashi has sources, but I have to ask you a different question. Is there any evidence in the entire Torah that Pinchas at this point was not a Kohen? Now, you know, before we go any further, you can tell me that, well, if he is a Kohen, then what in the world does this mean? Okay, we're not afraid of that question. On the other hand, why would we assume he's not a Kohen? Let's just start this out all over again. When God comes and tells Moshe to anoint Aaron and his children and his children's children afterward, and they're all going to become Kohanim, would any of us at that point, had we not known this Rashi, would any of us had suspected, therefore, oh, Pinchas is not included? Right. Why? Which means. When you read that section, you have no reason to believe that Pinchas is not included. There's really no reason over there to believe he's not included. Again, had we not known this Rashi, once we know, excuse me. I know Rashi says it. Which verse are you referring to? Is that Rashi's problem? What's really Rashi's problem? Rashi's problem really is identifying what is Brit Kunat Olam. And if he's already a Kohen, it makes no sense to have Brit Kunat Olam, so therefore he turns that he now gets anointed. At this point, he becomes a Kohen. But show me exactly where, and again, had Rashi not said this, how would you know this? Yeah, I don't think that there really is scriptural evidence for that. Which means Rashi could tell me he has a Mesorah. Why would he say he has a tradition? Because he does. What's his source? The Gemara says it, which just takes us back one earlier level, which means the Gemara is telling us that when Aaron is anointed, it's Aaron and his children and anybody born afterwards, but Pinchas was already born, so therefore Pinchas is left out. But again, would any of us have had thought that by ourselves, say, oh, it doesn't include Pinchas? No. You would have thought Aaron and his children, and what do children include? Children include grandchildren, and I'm saying at face value. See. Let's go back all over again. Some of us have been very fortunate to have Jewish education. We've been indoctrinated, and once we're indoctrinated, we lose the ability of reading the text critically because we have preconceived notions about what it says. And as naturally as we take this point. Well, of course Pinchas wasn't a Kohen because he was the one who was already born and he... Excuse me. The truth is that that doesn't make all that much sense. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's a more difficult approach to take. Why would Rashi take the more difficult approach? Why would he take the more difficult approach? Because he has to explain over here what it means, Brit Kunat Olam. And if he already is a Kohen, so then I'm somewhat stuck. So therefore, Rashi feels that this is the easiest way of understanding over here, and I'm going to use a word which is very often misused. Rashi feels that it's pshat. What's pshat according to Rashi? Pshat doesn't mean a literal interpretation. Pshat means interpretation within context. Well, you like that. You're writing that down. Good. Right. That's what pshat is. That, within context. Because Rashi very often not interprets something literally, but within the context of where it appears. Over here, Rashi's trying to explain this verse within the context. What's the context? The context is Pinchas receiving Brit Kunat Olam. So if he's receiving Brit Kunat Olam, I have a problem. The problem isn't he a Kohen already? So no, he's not a Kohen. Why isn't he a Kohen? Rashi has a source for it. He's not making it up. But as I said, if I go back to the other source where Aaron becomes a Kohen, this is not the simplest approach to take. Therefore, in source number two, what does Rashi do? Rashi brings this whole other midrash to support his thesis, which he hasn't given us yet. He's laying the groundwork. What does he say? Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron a Kohen. what was my first question? Who's the Kohen? Is it Pinchas or is it Aaron? So he says, Lafisha Yoshvatim Vazimoto, Hariitim Pen Boti Ze Shapitim Aviya Imo Agalim Lavodazara, Varagnasi Shevet Israel, Lafichach Bakatu Viachasu Achar Aaron. That because he did a behavior which is perceived as being an unacceptable behavior, because he did something which people thought had foreign influences to it, said, oh, it must be because of his lineage coming from Yitro. Now, how in the world Pinchas comes from Yitro, that's based upon something which is in the sixth chapter of Shmot. Rashi says this in three different places in the Chumash. So if you've never saw it before, so I'm letting you know this is one of three places. The other places is in Perek Vav in Shmot, where it talks about Pinchas' father having married one of the daughters of Pituel, and there Rashi gives that interpretation as well. And the third place where Rashi brings it in is regarding Milchemet Midyon, chapter 31, which maybe we'll talk about next week. Maybe, maybe not. But there Rashi mentions this as well. And the Gemara has two different possibilities what Pituel means. Either it means Yitro, or it means from Yosef. And the Gemara ends up, it means both. How exactly it means both, not for today. But what is the Gemara telling us, or what is Rashi quoting over here? That Pinchas' behavior was seen as being foreign. So if it's being foreign, what do I then need to do? I need to show that, no, Pinchas' behavior isn't foreign. Where does Pinchas really come from? It's Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron the Kohen. Now, wasn't that very complicated? What would have been the easier way to understand this? That Pinchas was a Kohen, and his father was a Kohen, his grandfather was a Kohen. But you see, Rashi gave this whole elaborate interpretation because, as far as Rashi is concerned, Kohen doesn't fit in over here. So he has to show why it does fit in anyway. So as I already told you, once you read this, you're already now in the mindset that Pinchas isn't a Kohen. Yes? Well, you have to know how to read between the lines. Yeah.
And I didn't get that at all.
You know why? Because I had a better teach than you do. I learned how to read Rashi with Rav Soloveitchik and with Nechama Leibowitz. You're stuck with me. So this is what you do. The first thing you do is you read the verse by itself without anything.
Right.
Without Rashi. Or the way that Rav Breuer used to say, I also learned with him, he used to say you should read the Chumash the same way Chazal did. And how did Chazal read it? Without Chazal. Right? So that's the first thing that you do is you read it by itself. When you read it by yourself, you try to look and say, now, is there anything over here which is not necessarily clear? Is there anything over here which is confusing? Is there anything here that can be read in more than one way? Is there anything over here that needs to be explained? Now, sometimes in order to do that, and that's what I'm trying, that was my point about context, sometimes it's within one verse. I would not suggest read one verse, try to figure out what Rashi is going to say. No. Read a whole section, because that's what I meant by context. Read a whole section. And now see, does this section as a whole have any kinds of strands to it which are not necessarily clear? If there are some strands that aren't clear, let me make note of it. Now let me read the Rashi. Is Rashi explaining the points that I found difficult? Which means over here, and again, I'll go back and say it again. The difficult points over here are the interrelationships between the Brit Shalom and the Brit Kunat Olam. That's what's difficult. What's the interrelationship, and therefore the problem will be, what is the definition? Rashi will understand that Brit Kunat Olam is independent from Brit Shalom. Brit Kunat Olam means he will now become a Kohen. In order to say that, you therefore have to claim that right now he's not a Kohen. So if he's not a Kohen right now, why does it say Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron a Kohen? Now that is not an insurmountable problem. Right, that's not an insurmountable problem, but now you realize... But I'm saying, but now you realize why Rashi is giving you that elaborate interpretation, because he's going to come back and...
That we understood.
Okay. So we're doing okay. Let's continue. Correct? Right. By the way, there are at least two other times in the Torah that Pinchas is mentioned, and both of those times he's mentioned as Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron a Kohen. Does that weaken Rashi's position over here or strengthen it? It doesn't strengthen it.
It's neutral.
No.
It's not neutral?
No.
Well, it enforces that the Aaron was the Kohen and not Pinchas yet.
Yeah, but again, over here, Rashi is going out of his way to tell us why it says Kohen, so therefore you would think that in the other places it doesn't say it. So guess what? In the other places, it does say it. Okay? I'm just hoping. By the way, that again, if you really want to talk about methodology, Rashi is not sitting here comparing this section and that section. Rashi looks at Pshat within context. So Rashi would be willing to be inconsistent from one place to the other as long as he's being more more consistent in terms of his interpretation right over here. Yeah. But you know what you would expect?
But
no, but you would then expect Rashi in each one of the times to explain why it gives you the whole lineage. Because over here he does. No, but over here he gives you the reason. So in this context he says that there's a reason it writes it, so there should be the other reason in the other places as well. Okay, but let's move on. At Briti Shalom, source number 3, Rashi writes, Shetehelo Brit Shalom Ka'adam Hamachzik Tova V'chinut L'misha Ose Imo Tova Afkan Pirush L'Kodesh Baruch Hu Shlomot. It's Shlomot. Peace. Basically, Rashi is saying over here, well, I'll read the translation, to be a covenant of peace for him like a man who harbors gratitude and favor towards someone who benefited him. Here, too, the Holy One of the Blessed be expressed him his peace. I mean, as far as Rashi is concerned over here, this Briti Shalom is really not explained. Briti Shalom over here becomes basically God is saying thank you. But what is the essence of this Brit that we're not told? It's almost as if Rashi is telling us the motivation for making the covenant more so than he's dealing with, but what is the covenant? And that interests us, what is the covenant? Vaita lo briti zot. And that's very interesting. Again, look back at Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vaita lo ulazaro acharav brit kunat olam. Vaita lo, he's saying briti zot. So what does it sound like according to Rashi? We're still talking about Briti Shalom. Brit Kunat Olam, so therefore it sounds as if Rashi is telling us that the Brit Shalom and the Brit Kuna is the same thing. Because when he explained Brit Shalom, what did he tell us? He didn't tell us what it was, he told us God's motivation. Over here, when he tells us Vahaita Lo Briti Zot, which Brit, the one I just now explained, which one's that Briti Shalom. So what does it come out according to Rashi? That Briti Shalom is the Brit Kuhuna. Now you have a problem. What's the problem? Why would God have to express his thanks to Pinchas and give him a Brit Kuhuna, which at this point, according to Rashi, is the same thing as the Brit Shalom? Which means he's getting two Britot, they're really one, and I would have thought he already had it. So now what does Rashi have to come and tell me? Guess what? He doesn't have it yet. And therefore he tells us that there was really a Pinchas clause. Why would, not like Santa Claus. Why was there a Pinchas clause in the Torah? Why is there a Pinchas clause? Well, that he doesn't tell us why. And Rashi doesn't deal with the why. But Rashi says, well, look how this works out. When God made the Kohanim, it's Aaron and his children, and children's children who'll be born. And Pinchas, therefore, got left out. He wasn't grandfathered in the new rules, he's on the old rules, and he's stuck, and he's the one who's left out, and therefore it's only right that he becomes Kohen now as well. And that's what ends up according to Rashi. So I'm telling you, everything we've seen till now in Rashi points to one thing. What is it? That Pinchas wasn't a Kohen, that explains what the Brit Kuhuna is, the Brit Shalom becomes the same thing, that explains the first. And as I said, Rashi all the way through over here is really dealing with one point. Yes? Yes. Why should Pinchas not be a Kohen till now? So you saw, perhaps, a very nice explanation in source number 7 by the Riva. Lefisha kapav nugalu bedam v'kohen sharagat nefesh lo yisad panav v'yamityaresh yam yafsid kuhunato l'kach natan lo kadosh baruch hu et brito shalom. Kepirish haram mikutzi. So what does he say? This is very interesting. And I'll get to the Zohar in a second, because the Zohar goes with this. What's he telling us? First of all, is he telling us that Pinchas was a Kohen till now or wasn't Kohen till now? I will.
I think he's saying he was a Kohen, but he lost his.
What he's telling us is that there's a law that a Kohen who kills cannot function as a Kohen. So therefore, normally, a Kohen who's killed loses his kuna. By the way, the Zohar tells us that the reason that Pinchas was left out from being a Kohen was because God knew that he was going to kill. Right? God knew that he was going to kill, so therefore God didn't want it to become invalidated as a Kohen, that when he killed, he wasn't a Kohen, so he wasn't a Kohen he killed. Because the point that he killed, he wasn't a Kohen, therefore he becomes a Kohen afterwards, because, you know, again, from the Zohar's perspective, that's the simple interpretation. Now, again, what does the Riva tell us? Riva is saying that normally a Kohen loses his kahuna if he kills, and the Brit Shalom, which by the way is interesting because he wrote the word Shalom without the Vav. Shalem, it looks like. Is it Shalom or Shalem? Okay, so here's the little secret about that. If you look in the Torah, and I know you can't always see this up close from the women's section, but if you look at the Torah up close over here, you will see that the word Shalom is written with the Vav either small or broken in half. I have seen, it's funny, but it's sad. Because you don't always pay attention in shul. I remember getting to shul by Mincha, Parshat Balak, and they take out the Torah, the Baruch Hu starts to read and says, oh no, it's Pasul, and puts it away. And I'm not paying attention. And then they take out another one. He goes, oh, look at this. It's Pasul in the same place. And I say, what are you doing? The letter is written on purpose with a crack in it. I mean, normally letters are crack in it, then it's Pasul. The truth is that they shouldn't be so quick by any way saying it's Pasul, or any way by putting it away. And some people are very fast on the draw over here. But I saw this week, Shabbat afternoon, I saw. No, you know, you can't tell, but I'm standing there, and the guy's reading, and then he stops and he's looking at it, and I say, go on, it's fine. And he's thinking, how in the world can I know from where I'm sitting that it's fine and I can't see it? Because I know what he's looking at. He's looking at the broken Vav. Just right over here in this case. Brit Shalom. So the Gemara tells us that over here, the Gemara has a very interesting thing. It teaches us, the Gemara claims, that the Brit Shalom tells us that a Kohen normally needs to be Shalem. Needs to be whole. And if a Kohen is missing an organ, missing an arm, missing a leg, missing an ear, missing something, then a Kohen can't function as a Kohen. The Kohen needs to be Shalem. So if you hear that, that's what's clever about the Riva. The Riva is saying is that if a Kohen killed, then he's not really Shalem. That there's something imperfect about this Kohen. He can't be a proper Kohen. And therefore, no, God gave him a Brit Shalom. What does a Brit Shalom mean? That he got rehabilitated. That even though normally a Kohen that kills becomes incapacitated as a Kohen, that the Brit Shalom, the Brit of wholeness, you like that? By the way, what else comes out then? That the Brit Shalom and the Brit Kohuna is the same thing. The two Britot here become one. What is it? It's a Brit of becoming a Kohen. But according to this approach, the Riva, he already was a Kohen. But he was a Kohen, he lost being a Kohen, and he becomes a Kohen again. How does he become a Kohen again? He becomes rehabilitated. How did he become rehabilitated? Now he's Shalom. That's the Brit Shalom or Shalem. Now let's go back to Rashi a second. Was there more of a reason to accept Rashi's approach? This is talking about Shalom and Kohuna, or Shalom, which means Rashi is not paying attention to the fact that the Vav is broken, and if the Vav is broken, it comes out more Shalem than Shalom. Which means, why should I connect Kohen with Shalom? What does one thing have to do with the other? No, you just said Shalem. You can't answer Shalem when I ask you about Shalom. I'll help you. No, one sec. This is my fault. I asked the wrong question. What does a Kohen have to be with being Shalem? So now your answer is good. Now I'll try again. What does a Kohen have to do with Shalom? Is there any correlation between a Kohen and Shalom? Is there anything about a Kohen and Shalom? Don't do that. You can't do that. Just stop. You just went back to Shalem again. Can we try this again? I know this is my fault. I keep asking the wrong questions. Is that a Kohen? Aaron, Havi, Tamidav, Shil Aharon, Ohev, Shalom, Verode Shalom. Very good. You can answer better than that. So, it was very good, but what did she do? She brought me a Mishnah, and a Mishnah that was over here in the sources. She brought me a Mishnah. She could have done better than that. How can you do better than bring a Mishnah? Excellent. So what does a Kohen have to do with Shalom?
He makes Shalom b'shvilo, Hashem
b'yam. Good. What's the bracha that the Kohen says in Berakah Kohenim? V'yisem lecha Shalom. By the way, in Shemona Esrei, where do we stick Berakah Kohenim? And what are the next words right afterwards? Sim Shalom. And how does the bracha end there? Hamavrechet Amo Yisrael b'shalom. Which means the whole Birchat Kohanim is all wrapped up in Shalom. So therefore, one second. So let's go back to Rashi now. Rashi linked together the Brit Kohuna with the Brit Shalom. And I asked you, does that make any sense? And what's the answer?
Sure,
it makes sense. Why?
Because they're one item.
Right. Because it's almost...
It's like a mirror.
Right. It's almost synonymous, right? That Shalom and Kohen go together. So therefore, in Rashi's mind, when it says, I'm going to give him Briti Shalom, and that's Brit Kohuna, and they are the same, I can defend that approach, both based upon verses, based upon the Mishnah, based upon the Tefillah, and all of those things come together to tell me that being a Kohen and being involved in Shalom is one. Now I flip it around and I go back to the Riva. And what did the Riva do? The Riva is telling me that it's also the same, but he comes from a different starting point. What's his starting point? That he already is a Kohen. He's not getting to be a Kohen. He already is a Kohen. And if he already is a Kohen, so what's the problem?
He lost it, then
he should have lost it. So what's the bracha? The bracha is brachat shalom, which really means shalem, that he becomes rehabilitated, he becomes whole again. So if he becomes whole again, now he becomes a Kohen again. You like this? Am I working too hard?
What is the
Yeah, which one? Nig'olu bidam, became all dirty with the... Yeah, because full of blood. His hands were full of blood, which means, by the way, think of the image that he's telling you. What does a Kohen do? He lifts up his hands to bless the people. How can hands that are full of blood be the hands to bless the people? So that's inappropriate, but what happens? He becomes, or worse, he's not traumatized. Okay, good. What does the Ibn Ezra do with all this? And by the way, if you were to ask the Ibn Ezra, what he told you is really pshat in the whole thing. What does he tell you? He says, "V'scharo she'tiyeh lo l'zaro charav brit kunat olam v'netzach ki akonim hagdolim hayu mibnei Pinchas." What is the covenant of kahuna over here? He already is a Kohen. If he already is a Kohen, he can't become another Kohen. He says, "Oh yes, he can." That means what is the covenant that the high priesthood, the kahuna gdola, will come out of Pinchas? That is what God tells him. There were other, and he tells us, Yitachen, it could be that there were other lines or other possibilities of where the Kohen Gadol could have come from. Perhaps Elazar had other children. He tells us, no, that the Kohen Gadol will go from Aaron to Elazar to Pinchas. That means that this is the covenant. Your descendants will all be, all the Kohen Gadols will come from Pinchas. And that's the Brit Kunat Olam. And by the way, go and convince me that what Ibn Ezra said isn't pshat. It's a very nice pshat. But again, I told you, what's our starting point? Our starting point is that we know Rashi. And we know Rashi, and we're convinced that what Rashi says, it says it in the Chumash. I'm just trying to show you that Rashi isn't as simple as you thought. Rashi was really quite elaborate. And Rashi has a whole explanation in order to get, he sets you up to get to that point. He gets to that point, he explains it, the reason he does it, because he's bothered by what this means, Brit Kunat Olam. He's aware of the interpretation of the Ibn Ezra, By the way, if you're interested in methodology, the Rashi has a Gemara to back him up. What would the Ibn Ezra's response to that be? I don't want to be flippant. No, even better. Ibn Ezra doesn't care. Ibn Ezra doesn't care. Ibn Ezra will tell you that's very nice, there's a Gemara, that's what halacha is. But halacha and chumash are not the same thing. That means that Ibn Ezra would say there is this independent thing called pshuto shamikra, what the Torah means, and it doesn't have to fit into the Gemara. No, but I'm saying it wouldn't, meaning if I were to sit down with the two of them and say to Rashi, why don't you follow Ibn Ezra? What exactly brought Rashi in that direction? He would say, well, this works out with the Gemara a little bit better, with which, by the way, Rashi, 95% of what he's telling you will fit in with the Gemara, Midrashim, or other sources. The Ibn Ezra, much lower percentage. And the Ibn Ezra, meaning, remember I told you that Rashi's interested in simple interpretation in terms of context. The Ibn Ezra wants to know more of an interpretation in terms of literal context, in terms of the written Torah, and is not at all impressed with the oral Torah. Not that he doesn't believe in it or accept it, he does. But he just thinks that the written Torah, remember there's a thing, Ein Pshuto Yotzei Midei, Ein Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto, that a verse should not be taken out of its simple reading. The Ibn Ezra would say, there's a thing called the simple reading which exists by itself. But then you'll say, but Torah Shabbat tells you something else. He'll say, correct, that tells you what to do, but it doesn't tell you how to read the Torah. That means he thinks that there's an ethic or there's a value in being able to read the Torah in terms of its simple literal meaning, and that is a value itself. The fact that Chazal may tell us, well, this really means this and this really means that, is important, is essential as Jews, but not essential to read it. And he would say the other way around. Don't let the rabbinic reading and the halacha take away from your simple reading that you would have had by yourself. So therefore, the fact that a Gemara supports Rashi would not have caused the Ibn Ezra to budge on this particular point. He would have felt that this interpretation is a better interpretation. Ibn Ezra is earlier, before the Ramban. The Ramban quotes the Ibn Ezra, quotes Rashi. The Ramban is more Ibn Ezra-like than he is Rashi-like, because the Ramban will very often tell us, Rashi says this, Ibn Ezra says this, the Gemara says this, but I think it means this. And you say, hold it, if any rabbi today would say that, they would get run out of town. So where does the Ramban get the permission to come and say, but I think it means this? Because the Ramban, it's the same thing. He is very similar to that point of the Ibn Ezra. The Ramban is a little bit closer to, he'd be more concerned, or he would try harder to work it in. The Ramban also has one other thing, and that is that he'll very often then read into it the Kabbalistic interpretation as well, which is what he really thinks that it means. Ibn Ezra is around the 11th century.
So, Rambam?
Yes, around the same time as the Rambam. Yeah. The Rambam, by the way, is after Rashi. The Rambam never saw Rashi, as far as we know. He lives after him, but he never quotes him at all. Because again, it's not just it's not just when you live. It's also where you live. And where information may have flowed from one place to the other. It's not like today that somebody texts somebody or calls somebody at the other end of the world and immediately it gets there. It's one of the ironies that the Rambam lives significantly after Rashi, never quotes him in any place whatsoever, and apparently he never saw Rashi, never saw his interpretation. They didn't have art scroll.
No.
They didn't have printing presses.
Ramban.
No, the Ramban does. The Ramban does all the time. The Rambam. Right, but it's 100 years later. Those 100 years allowed Rashi to become quite famous. But I said that's what's interesting. Rambam was 100 years before the Ramban, but he was after Rashi, but he never cites Rashi.
He never got to see.
Right. And he has, by the way, dialogues with Tosfot, with some of the people of Tosfot, but he apparently never saw Rashi's commentary. Okay. Rabbeinu Bachaye is, by the way, a wonderful interpretation. When I say wonderful, he's a wonderful commentary. So much so that if you're looking for something to do next year, it's a worthwhile comment to read, and it's available in English as well as Hebrew. You get a whole English translation of it, and you can sit with it.
Rabbeinu Bachaye,
yes.
That's in English, B-E-C-H-A-Y.
However they may spell it.
Okay,
in
doesn't matter.
It's complicated how they spell it. Yes, yes. Wonderful interpretation. But what does he do? First of all, he's very similar to the Ramban. Most of the interesting Rambans he quotes. But notice even over here how he goes. If you look at source number 8, he says, Alderach HaPshat. The next paragraph is Alderach HaMidrash. And the third paragraph is Valderach HaKabbalah. And by the way, that's a normal approach for him. He'll do that very, very often. So when he says Alderach HaPshat, what is the Pshat as far as he's concerned? What is Briti Shalom? Hiftichu Bivrit Shalom Shalo Yifached. What's shalom? What?
That's really pshat.
He goes, what's shalom? He just killed somebody. So what's he afraid? That someone is going to come after and try to get revenge. So what does he say? You read this, you know what? Why didn't I even notice that till now? Why didn't you notice that? Because you're too busy being stuck within Rashi and thinking that shalom and kahuna were all the same thing.
Nobody starts up
But still,
there's relatives, right?
There's relatives of him and there's relatives of her.
Right.
So they were both popular people. They're both famous people. They're both influential people. So over here, Ben Chai says, you know what the Brit Shalom is? The Brit Shalom is that God says, you know what? I got you back.
I'm getting you water.
Give me two more. One's enough. As my students would say, I got you back. Okay? And then he says, okay, let's read it through. Aderech HaPshat, Hivtichu Bivrit Shalom, Shlo Yifached Neache Zimri, Shlo Yinkamu Nikmato. Uma Yescharo. By the way, he's not unique in this interpretation. I'm just saying there's half a dozen Mepharshim Rishonim who all say the same thing. Vaitalol Zaro Acharav Brit Kuhunat Olam, Shitlo HaKuhunat Nitzchit. That he will be a coin forever. Thank you. What exactly that means, a coin forever? Let's continue.
That's too simplistic. What does it mean? His children's natural. Keep going.
There always could be situations that somebody can lose the kahuna. There are ways. No. One second. There are ways of losing kahuna. Marrying the wrong person or whatever I'm saying. There are ways of losing the kahuna. He says no. Here's the covenant. You will be kohen forever. He then, as far as the midrash goes, he goes into the broken vav. In the shalom, and he goes into that bit. We're skipping that because you already heard about that. Then, in terms of what he calls the derech haKabbalah, the more kabbalistic interpretation, we'll pick it up where it's underlined. Umikan hayera'ui sheyichye la'olam, that if he got this idea of shalom, real shleimut, means that he should live forever. Ulachin katuv briti haita ito hachayim v'hashalom. So he quotes a wonderful verse to tell us that chayim and shalom, life and peace, should be synonymous, and therefore, when we're told that he gets a covenant of peace, what he may have achieved at that point was a covenant of life. So hold on to eternal life. So hold on to that for a second. The part that I skipped over here, which we're not going to go into, because I cut off all the sources, which is appropriate because we talked about the cutoff Vav, the sources that spoke about this, but if you look at the Baal HaTurim on the Vav over there, the Baal HaTurim will tell you the broken Vav is connected to the extra Vav that Yaakov has in his name on a number of occasions. Yaakov is written without a vav.
Right.
On a couple of occasions, Yaakov is written with the vav. Eliyahu is written with a vav. On a couple of occasions, Eliyahu is written without a vav. Eliyah, not Eliyahu.
Really?
Yes. Including the last pasuk in Navi, which everybody, when they sing the song, they sing it wrong. Hine anuchi shaleich lachem et Eliyah. It says, not Eliyahu hanavi. Eliyah.
Elijah. Is that the English?
Yes.
Eliyah.
So over here, so the Baal Turim says is that Yaakov and Eliyahu have a deal going on
with the Vav,
and it means that Mashiach will out. I'm not getting into the whole thing, but that's part of what he's getting into over here. But he's telling us that Brit Shalom means that Pinchas should really live forever. By the way, how long does Pinchas live? According to tradition, he lives hundreds of years, and we find him around 300 years later still alive as a Kohen, still alive as a Kohen Gadol. So that would theoretically be part of this blessing over here. What verse did he quote? Malachi Bet He. So that's what I asked you to look at in source number 10. Now, if we look at Malachi Bet He, it says, Briti Haita Ito. So now, who is the Ito? We don't know, because we're reading out of context, correct? So we go back a verse, try to get a little bit better context. V'yedatam ki shalachti aleichem et ha-mitzvah hazot leyot briti et Levi amar Hashem Tzvakot. I gave a covenant to someone from Levi, or Levi as a whole, or someone from Levi. Briti hayta ito achayim v'shalom. The covenant I made with him was chayim and shalom. Now what did Rabbeinu Bachaya tell us? This verse is referring to whom? This is the verse referring to Pinchas. If you had a chance afterwards of looking at source 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, where the various Rishonim deal with who is this verse talking about, you'll notice that it tells us either it's talking about Pinchas, look at Rashi for a second in source 11, Hachayim v'shalom shenemar lePinchas et briti shalom. So what Rabbeinu Bachaye did and brought into his commentary on the Chumash, Rashi is doing, bringing his commentary on Malachi. That when it says over here, I'm giving you the covenant of Chayim v'shalom, that's really talking about Pinchas. The Radak tells us, in Rosh Hashevet Lukunava, hu Aron Kodesh Hashem u Pinchas. He tells us it's to Aron and to Pinchas. They both got it. Which, by the way, is interesting, because where does he see that Aron gets this covenant? Let's go back one more second, back into Malachi, because I jumped out of there too quickly. Back in verse Pasuk Hey, I'll go back to again. Briti ha'ita ito chayim v'shalom ve'et neim lo mora v'yir'enu mei shmi nichatu. I gave him to him out of fear and he feared me and was afraid of my name. Torat emet ha'ita b'pihu, b'fihu. True Torah was in his mouth v'avla lo nimtza b'sfatav and lies were not coming through his lips. B'shalom uv'mishor halach iti with peace and with uprightness, it translates. Mishor is like straightness, to be straight. Halach iti went with me. Barabim heshiv me'avon, and he saved many from sin. And when you read this, you have to ask, now who is this talking about? Ki sifte kohen yishmeru dat, for the priest's lips should keep knowledge. V'torah yivakshu mipihu, and Torah you should try to get from him. Uve mishor halach, sorry. Mipiu ki malach Hashem tzvakot, for he is an angel of God. Now that's all very interesting, because as far as most of the Rishonim are concerned, this verse is talking about whom? About Pinchas. But did you notice what the Navi did when it's talking about Pinchas? What did it call him? It called him a malach. Now, some of you, or maybe all of you, are aware of this Kabbalistic tradition, which is that Pinchas and Eliyahu are the same person. Pinchas is Eliyahu. What is that based on? All kinds of considerations, including the consideration that Pinchas is supposed to live forever. How many people do you know who have lived forever? Well, in Jewish tradition, there's one person who never dies. Right, there's one person who never dies, and that's Eliyahu. Right. And if Eliyahu never dies, wouldn't it be convenient if Eliyahu was Pinchas? But over here, you notice something very interesting, that when the verse is referring to Pinchas, and what makes you think it's referring to Pinchas, it talks about Tarat Emet Haita Befiyu. He was a man, the truth was on his mouth. And he walked with peace. He is the Kohen, and he's an angel of God. So now you can understand why there have been those who have imagined, and I say imagined, I don't mean that in a derogatory way, who theorized that this is speaking about Pinchas who becomes Eliyahu. Now I want to go back a second and think about something. Let's start all over again. here we have Pinchas. We have in the community at the time an outrage taking place. It starts off with people that are worshipping Baal. We then have a situation where one of the men, who we later find out is Zimri, takes one of the women named Cozbi and does some other kind of outrage with her. Pinchas stands up, kills them both, and by doing this, he stops the plague in the community. What does he get as a reward? Covenant of peace, shalom, and kahuna, which are either one and the same or they're two different things, and we've seen all kinds of ways of understanding this. And when we begin to think about it, we want to either compare him or contrast him to Aaron, because Aaron is the first or the prototypical Kohen. We're told, what is Aaron, as you quoted before, Ohiv Shalom, Rodev Shalom, right? Havim Mitamidi. Aaron is somebody who's a peace lover, lover of peace. Now the question is, if this kind of behavior of Pinchas in our minds is closely aligned with the behavior of Aaron, or it seems somewhat different. I want to stop a second and throw out a question to you. Aaron was not appointed Kohen until after the Chetah Egel. Okay? You know, in Judaism, there are three major sins. What are they? Gilui Arayot, sexual sins, Avodah Zarah, idolatry, Shfichat Damim, murder, or spilling of blood. Pinchas commits murder. Again, murder is a value judgment. He certainly spills blood. And then he gets catapulted into a position of Kohen, maybe even Kohen Gadol, or maybe even Kohen Gadol forever. On the other hand, we find Aaron being guilty of Avodah Zarah, idolatry, and then he gets catapulted into being Kohen Gadol. So now, I would want to compare these two behaviors, which is this the same or is this different? So let's go back to two words that are used in this context, which I think are critical words. The two words over here are shalom, which we've been spending the whole day with, and then verse number 6, Pasuk Vav, it says, Torat emet haita bepihu. There was truth, the Torah of truth in his mouth. Now, this is worthwhile thinking about, but there are two things in this world that have a very hard time getting along with one another. And what's that? That's truth and peace. Truth and peace have a very hard time getting along with one another. Now, if you think about it, when Aaron is guilty of making the Egel, what does he see according to the Midrash? He sees they killed Hur, which means there's this threat of blood being spilled. What does he do? He makes the idol, which, by the way, there's no bigger lie than idolatry. There's nothing which is as far from truth as idolatry. And what does he achieve? He achieves momentary peace, which means Aaron chooses peace over truth. What does Pinchas do? Pinchas chooses truth over peace, and therefore kills the people that are guilty of the outrage. So you see over here that Aaron and Pinchas are opposites. Did you all get my point just now? Aaron chooses peace over truth, while Pinchas chooses truth over peace. By the way, would it now surprise you that God gives him a gift of peace? Because that's what he needs.
Right?
Right? Now, if you're going to tell me that the quintessential element of being a Kohen is, as you told me before, shalom, and you quoted Ohev shalom, Verodev shalom. So it's very interesting then that Pinchas is given that. But by the way, if you look in source 19, Hillel Shama Kiblu Mehem, Hillel Omer Have Mitamidav Shal Aaron, Oiv Shalom Verodiv Shalom, Oiv Yitibyot Mekarvan LaTorah. He says, be a lover of peace, pursue peace, love peace, and so on. Oiv, right, Shalom Verodiv Shalom. Source number 20 tells over the story that a lot of you heard as kids. Oiv Shalom Ketzad, how do you love peace? You should love peace as Aaron loves peace. Right? Why? Isn't that interesting? Which verse did it quote? It quoted the verse we were just looking at. Now hold it a second. How could it quote a verse about truth when it's trying to talk about peace? And by the way, what does Aaron then do? That he quotes the verse in Rav Meir Omer, Ma Talmud Lomer, Rabbi Hashiv Me Avon. What does this verse mean? He brings a lot of people from sin. And the story that I think that we're familiar with, that Aaron would go over to people that were really wicked and he would say, be nice to them, and that would bring them back. Hold it. What does that have to do with truth? Or, it continues to say, if two people were fighting, he would tell one of them, you know how much the other one wants to make up with you, and he's sitting and crying, and he's upset. One second, is that true? Which means, if I go back to this tension between truth and peace, Aaron seems to always choose peace. Which means, I have no problem with Hillel telling us, and right, isn't Hillel one of the good guys in Jewish history? Hillel tells us, what should you do? Oiv shalom, verodiv shalom. Right? Great. What's the difficulty? Why do they quote this verse about Torah Emet Bisfatav? It's not Emet. It's not Emet. Okay, but it's still, it's very interesting, but it's not Emet, but somehow it's quoting over here Emet. So you're right, there must be something more complex taking place over here. If we continue, you know, and try to think this through a little bit more, why is it that peace and truth have difficulty coexisting?
Because very often when you say the truth, it's confrontational and people don't want to hear it.
Right. If my wife says, do I look fat in this dress, what am I supposed to say?
You have to say,
you let's go, we're late.
And I told her, I'll stick with her through thick and thin. Yeah. Don't worry. Truth is perception. Truth is subjective. But even more than that, the problem of reconciling peace and truth. But by the way, Rav Soloveitchik once said that's something that Mashiach has to do. We can't do it. Which means we have to make choices in life. What are we going to do? Are we going to be people that are 100% truthful? We could, but we're not going to live in peace. Or we can be people that is sort of going to bend the truth here and there, and what, and then we can end up achieving peace. It's very depressing, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You have to read Sharansky's new book.
Should read his old book first, or?
You can. Sorry.
What about the older book?
Well, the last one.
I didn't read any books yet. Okay.
I'm watching him. It's like Harry Potter.
So again, over here we have a problem between truth and peace, but we find it interesting that Aaron is much more the peace lover, while Pinchas is the truth lover, and that creates a tension. Now, the part that I skipped.
Aaron is a much more beloved.
Yes, clearly. The source that I skipped with the rest of Rabbeinu Bachaye, if you didn't understand why he was doing it. He goes on, he starts talking about Eliyahu. Let's go back to source number 8 on the bottom paragraph where it's underlined. Pinchas should have lived forever. L'chein katuv, and then he quotes, B'riti ayta ito hachayim v'shalom. Ki hachayim mikoach harachamim, v'zeu sha'amar shekinah le'elokav, ki lashon tzedek v'shalom nashaku. which, by the way, that whole section, justice and peace kissed. Shehu achibur ha'elyon she'olam mitkayem bo. Shekenegdo b'yitzirat achna inyan hazivug v'chibur ha'ra'ui. L'kach kishira'a pinchas chabura l'bilti ra'ui kina. Mikan tavin b'midat ha'shalom she'nitan lo she'ya midah k'neged midah. I'm not going to get into the whole thing over here. It's worthwhile looking up that section in Tehillim, section 85 in Tehillim. But what it does refer to over there, okay, I'll read it to you. Chesed ve'emet nivkishu, tzedek v'shalom nashaku. Emet mi eretz tetzmach v'tzedek mishamayim nishkaf. Chesed v'emet nifkashu. Chesed, kindness and truth met. Tzedek v'shalom nashaku. Peace and justice. Which means these are things that don't always get along with one another. Are not always able to work them out. So what he says is that Pinchas sees this inappropriate connection. And then he goes on to say, V'yitachein lomar ki al shem sofer shenestalik v'chazar alayer nikra Eliyahu shehu kolel shnei shem odin v'rachamim. That what Pinchas is concerned about is a proper connection, therefore he comes back as Eliyahu. So what does Eliyahu have to do with this? You know, if you go looking through Chumash, there are many names that are connected to Aleph Lamed. Aleph Lamed is connected to Elohim. Elohim is Midat Hadin, God's aspect of justice. On the other hand, there are a number of names that are connected to Yud-Heh. Yud-Heh is God's name of Rachamim. Eliyahu is a hybrid of Din and Rachamim. Eliyahu is this combination of the two, which means Pinchas, in his eventual reincarnation, which is interesting, because we've already seen an approach that said there, from the Riva, that he gets rehabilitated. So what do we see over here? Not just does he get rehabilitated, is that Pinchas comes back in a later edition. What's the latest edition, Pinchas? That's Eliyahu. What happens in Eliyahu? Eliyahu now becomes the merger of the two different types, which means Pinchas in context, what does he do? I want to make sure that you get this so that we can end. What does Pinchas do? Pinchas embraces truth at the sake of peace. What does God tell him? I'm going to give you peace. Truth would be more connected with Midat Hadin. It's unbending. Peace would clearly be more connected with Midat Rachamim. Correct? Pinchas shows heroism in terms of his ability to cling to truth and not be afraid of anything and therefore mete out justice. And what does God give him? He gives him a gift of shalom. So it means, what is God giving him? An ability of creating a hybrid. What's that hybrid going to be? It's going to be some kind of a hybrid of shalom and emet. Now what will that then create? Right, that creates Eliyahu. Eliyahu is, his name is a hybrid between El, meaning Midat Hadin, and Yud Hei Vav, which would be the connotation of Midat Rachamim. So therefore Eliyahu becomes the new generation Pinchas and becomes this kind of hybrid. It's interesting to note that the verse we were reading, talking about Pinchas in Malachi, right? Ki Malach Hashem, who becomes a Malach. In the next chapter, in Malachi, we come back and it says, Zichru Torat Moshe Avdi. This is the last verses in Navi. Remember the Torah of Moshe, my servant, and so on. Hine Enochi Sholeach Lachem Et Eliyah. Right here is where Eliyah is missing his Hanavi Lefnei Bo Yom Hashem Agadu Vanara. Veheshiv Lev Avot Al Banim Velev Banim Avotam. And so on. That I'm going to send him back in order to create what? To create peace. The Mishnah, at the end of Edyot, you know, Eliyahu's reputation is that he's going to come and create some kind of a unity or something. You know, even, have you ever heard of the word teiku? What does the word teiku mean? Teiku means even. Teiku means tie. But there's a rumor that teiku means that Tishbi Yavo, that Eliyahu will come and explain what it all. It's not really what teiku means, but listen to what the Mishnah says at the end over here. It says that there's one opinion that the purpose of Eliyahu Amr Yeshua mekubal ani mi Rabbi Yochum ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yeshua says, I have a tradition from Yochum ben Zakkai. Sheshoma mi Rabbo, who heard from his teacher. V'Rabbo mi Rabbo, and he heard from his teacher. Halacha l'Moshe mi Sinai, going all the way back to Moshe at Sinai. She'ein Eliyo balatami latar l'rachik ulakarev. Ela l'rachik hamikoravin v'zro ulakarev hamiruchakin v'zroa. He says, hold on, what is exactly this means? That Eliyo, which is fascinating, means going all the way back to Moshe, he has tradition on what Eliyahu is going to do. How does Moshe have tradition about Eliyahu, other than somehow connecting him with Pinchas? But he says that his job will be in order to show which families people really come from, what people's lineage really is, because not everybody is who they think they are. So he goes, that's one opinion of the mission. This is the last mission in Edyot, at the end of chapter 8. The Chachamim Omrim, lo l'rachek v'lo l'karev, he doesn't come to bring closer, to pull away. Ella, why will Eliyahu come at the end? La'asot shalom ba'olam. The purpose of Eliyahu will be to bring peace to the world. Shenemar hineni sholeich lechem et Eliyahu navi, Eliyahu hanavi, v'gomer v'heshev leiv avot, elbanim v'leiv banim alavotam. He's there to merge together families, people that became broken, people that became separated, people that became distanced from one another. That's ultimately what Eliyahu is going to come back to do. So it's fascinating then, is that the idea of the Kohen is Shalom. The quintessential Kohen is Aaron. What does Aaron do? Aaron does an outrage. Namely, he makes the Egel Azav and therefore becomes Kohen. Why? Because he chooses peace over truth. I'm saying that's very interesting. He chooses peace over truth. It's not a simple path. Correct. Right. I'm saying not a simple path to take. Only to be done under rabbinic supervision. Not a simple path. That's what he does. On the other hand, Pinchas chooses truth over peace, but God gives him a present. God gives him shalom. The shalom is connected to the kahuna. He needs the shalom, according to what I'm saying now, he needs the shalom to become the Kohen. Without the shalom, he can't be the Kohen. Why? Because his action is antithetical to being a Kohen. Because a Kohen is one of peace, and he's not. So therefore, according to what I'm saying then, he gets the shalom to become the Kohen. But eventually what happens is that other side doesn't really disappear, and they both get merged together, the din and the rachamim, which is this ability of merging together truth and peace. It's interesting. The first opinion here in the Mishnah says, he comes to say, you're good, you're not good. What's all that about? That's truth. That's a pure aspect of truth. Which is the first opinion here is, what is Eliyahu going to do at the end of days? Truth. So how does it look at it? And only in terms of Midat Hadin. But the second one says, no, that's not it. It's that what he's going to come to do and come and create shalom. Which means Eliyahu, by the way, was full of jealousy for God as well. There's a lot of strictness in Eliyahu.
But,
right, I'm saying there's a lot of strictness there also. But what is Eliyahu? Eliyahu is the merger of the two sides. And that's what Rabbeinu Bachai told us, the very essence of Eliyahu, that is the Aleph Lamed.
Shalom and Emet.
He says, Din and Rachamim, I'm telling you, it's Shalom and Emet. That's what needed to be reconciled. And therefore, even though Pinchas at the very beginning of his career, what does he do? He clings to truth. And God gives him Shalom. At the very end of days, we're told what Eliyahu is going to do is he's going to establish shalom, and that will usher in the Messianic age. Have a good Shabbos.